always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Sunday evening. I guess, like, it's bedtime for my kids, so it's Sunday night by my account out here in Texas. But yeah, we are just kind of chugging along. Right? Offseason is well underway. Teams are making trades. Options are being picked up. Options are being declined. Teams are pushing back those decisions with free agents that they are at least in contact with. And meanwhile, we have the Lakers, who tendered a qualifying offer to Chris Mannion. But yeah, today on the show, we're going to be talking about the lack of stuff that we have to talk about. We did get an interesting rumor over the course of Sunday afternoon about LeBron James and Miami and the ultra rare double sign and trade. So I guess we'll talk a little bit about that. But honestly, today's show is all yours. It's the Sunday before kind of the busiest week in the NBA's offseason. You know, it's the 28th, right? And the first is when things really start popping off. So have at it. If you guys have any questions or comments or notes for the show or theories or trade proposals, go ahead and hit me with them, and I will get to as many of those as I possibly can. Also ask Twitter for some, so they will give me a few of those as well. As always, if you guys want to, you know, guarantee that your topic is covered here on the show without having to pay for it by a super comment, send it in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and I get to those every week whenever I see them. I was looking today. The last one we got was like a month ago. So, like, you guys got to fix that, man. I worked on a Saturday, and I haven't gotten an iTunes, a 5-star iTunes review in a month. That is unfair. That is mean. At the very least, hit me with a like. Hit me with a subscription here to the YouTube page. Turn on those notifications, and then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning, go ahead and subscribe to the show wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but honestly, it does not matter. It was funny over the weekend. Somebody was like, nobody uses Odyssey, and then spelt it like the Odyssey. And I was like, yeah, I know. I don't even use Odyssey. But if you choose to use it, it's a perfectly fine. I honestly don't get to listen to podcasts anymore, because I don't have a commute to work. So, but whatever it is that you choose to subscribe to podcasts with is perfectly fine with me. Have I told you guys my James Worthy podcast story? There's a bunch of new people here. You know what? Let's go ahead and get the vibes right. We'll start with that little story, and then I'll dive into some of the, like, there's nothing like concrete to talk about here. So I'll go ahead and start with a fun James Worthy story from early in my career, and then we'll go ahead and dive on into that weird LeBron Miami sign and trade that I'm almost positive isn't going to happen. And then we'll dive into your guys' questions, and then we'll get to watch Thrones together. How about that? So let's see, this was probably 7-8 years ago, maybe even 8 or 9 years ago. This was back when I was still hosting Locked On Lakers. And I think Harrison was still my co-host. But, you know, what Spectrum used to do back in the day was they would host these blogger nights. And so at that time, Harrison and I were running Silver Screen and Roll. I was hosting Locked On Lakers. They invited the guys who were running Lakers Nation and then, you know, some kind of more independent bloggers, you know, from throughout the internet as well. And what you would do is you would show up and you would have kind of like a car wash situation where, like, you know, you would sit down for like 15 minutes with various hosts and they would kind of, you know, they would sit down for with you for as long as they could. And then they would go and get ready for their show. And then during the show, you would, you know, those of us who were being hosted there, we would go eat like dinner in this little like closet that they would put us in. And then every so often, if there was room in their big like conference room, depending on the number of people who would show up, you would also get to watch games with like Spectrum talent, right? So the time, like a couple of the times that I went, like I got to sit next to Caron Butler and just basically talk basketball with him for a couple of hours. There was another time where I was sitting next to Derek Fisher, and you know, the more frequently that you would go, like the further up the table that you would go. So like, and the further up the table that you went, like the closer you would get to James Worthy, who would say all kinds of crazy things over the course of the game. Legitimately, the best part of these nights was any moment that you got to interact with James Worthy. So James, so this was the first year that we were doing this, and I, because of like the literal market, at that time, I was the only Lakers podcast, basically. Everybody else was like written word, and it, you know, their or their podcasts weren't like, you know, ready for guests or whatever. So, you know, we showed up and we talked to, I forget who the PR person was when we got there. We were like, yeah, can I talk to, you know, or, you know, they were like, all right, we have James ready for you today. We have Geeter ready for you today. Geeter has always been really good for these things. Brez is also a really fun conversation, as where was a really fun conversation back when this was still a thing. But this was back at a time before like podcasts had become anywhere near like a fraction of as popular as they are nowadays. So clearly this PR person, you know, had spoken to James Worthy and told him, hey, you're going to interview with so-and-so for his podcast. And very clearly, James Worthy did not know what a podcast was. So the funny, like if you ever go there to Spectrum's building, it's this very like cemented off thing. And it has these big cavernous hallways. And so I come around the corner and I you know, I pop my head around the corner and I'm carrying like all of my, you know, podcast equipment and stuff like this. And James is at the end of the hallway down there. And, you know, again, he's like, he had just finished with like makeup. So he's got like, you know, he's got like the tissue in his collar here or whatever. And he like pops his head out from the dressing room that he was in and getting ready in. And he goes, deep booming voice, obviously, James Worthy goes, yo, podcast. And I'm like, that's me. Yeah, I am podcast. And we like we get ready to record. He's like, I'm supposed to talk to you. And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna set up in here. Thanks, James. Yeah, I'll see you in a bit. I'll see you in a second. And by the way, this is really early on in my career. I am terrified of talking to anybody. The imposter syndrome is going off of the charts. And I'm just like, yeah, my name's podcast. Sure. So we get ready, we do this first interview, and it was a lot of fun. We were talking about, at that time, it was at a time where like bigs started shooting threes. So we spent a lot of time kind of talking about like modern geometry of basketball and floor spacing fours and how his game would have fit, seeing as he was kind of a small forward who played down to power forward at a time where the Lakers were running and gunning to the extent that they were. Had a really fun conversation there. Finished the interview, all that stuff, posted it. And I left that opportunity, that press opportunity. I called Harrison after we were done, and I was like, "Hey man, I think he thinks my name is podcast." Harrison just like busts up laughing on the other side, on the other end of the line. And then the next year, Harrison and I were supposed to record together with James. So we show up, and it's me and Harrison walking down the hallway. And at this time, Lakers Nation, I think, had like launched their show. Trevor had launched their show with their like social media army. So their show had like taken off already and stuff. And we're just kind of chugging along. I poke my head around the corner. And you know, see James there at the end of the thing, and same thing. He's got his like tissue paper on the you know, on the inside of his collar, popping out. He had just gotten out of makeup, and he's like, "Yo, podcast." And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And Harrison busts up laughing. He's like, "Yeah, he definitely thinks your name is podcast, man." So we like go into our little room, our little cubby hole, and I set up like the mic equipment and stuff like that, get ready for the few people that they're going to send our way over the course of this interview. And James happens to be the first one there, and he goes, how you doing, podcast? And I'm like, all right, hey man, this is awkward, but actually my name's Anthony. And he goes, I know, man, I've been fucking with you this whole time. He goes, "Hey Anthony, how are you doing? How's your family holding up?" And I'm just like, jaws on the floor, you know, just, you know my name. And so I, you know, we finished this, we finished that episode, or we do that interview, a little 15 minute interview, as well as a couple other 15 minute interviews that we kind of piece together for a longer episode and kind of go on our own way. And get home, and I tell my parents, like, dude, I think James really knows my name. Maybe. I don't know. And but shouts to James Worthy, man. He was just always so incredibly nice and thoughtful. And at some point, it was funny because right before I got laid off from SB Nation, Silver Screen and Roll, the idea that I was going to pitch those guys on was, hey, what if we, you know, pitch James Worthy on being like my permanent co-host, and he and I do our show together, and, you know, split it however you need to split it to be able to bring him on and stuff like that. And like a week later, I got laid off. So that's what they thought of that idea. Let's go ahead and dive on into free agency.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. So weird thing happened over the course of today being Sunday. My wife and I have been or had, well, basically for the last like 2 months, I have been working on our garage. It might even date back even further than that. It all kind of started because our garage door, we have a three-car garage set up, and the main door, the big door, the spring on that thing broke. And We had to, in order to get it replaced, we had to like completely change out the spring and all the stuff. It was going to cost all this money. And I turned 40 in October. And, Jen had been asking me, hey, what do you want to do for your 40th? Where do you want to go? What, like, do you want to do like a big party? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And I had thought about it and I was like, well, shit, we're going to be doing a lot of work on the garage anyway. What if we do a golf sim? And, I pitched Jen on the idea and she's like, well, how much do you think that's going to cost? And I was like, well, the big kind of 40-year-old trip that we were going to take was probably going to be around 10 grand anyway, when you factor in flights with the kids and hotel and all of this other stuff. So can my budget just be 10 grand on the flight, on the golf sim? And she was like, that's a little steep, but sure. All right, let's do that. I did this knowing that it was only going to cost like 3 grand and that's what it wound up costing or whatever. But like, as part of doing the golf sim, like basically what I needed to be able to do was open up a whole bay of our garage so that we could do that there. And then we can have room for my car and then also room for Jen's car. And in order to do that, we had a big junk pickup, and then I had to build a storage shed out in the backyard to put all of the stuff that I do the lawn with. It's been a whole fucking thing. And finally today was the day that we did all of the work necessary to open up room for my car and her car after having built the golf sim. And so it was like, just working our asses off. It's hot and it's humid and I'm sweating. I had to take my phone out of my pocket because of the moisture that I knew was coming off there. I pick up my phone at one point, realizing, shit, I haven't had my phone in my pocket all day. What's going on? And I have like 5 texts about this hypothetical about that apparently Brian Windhorst had mentioned, I think, on a show or in a radio availability kind of thing, about a sign and trade between the Lakers sign and trade between the Lakers and the Heat, where LeBron would go to Miami and Andrew Wiggins would come back here to LA. And I get all those texts about it, and I'm kind of running through the hypothetical with the various people that I'm talking this out with. And, eventually, where I kind of land on is like, it's just not realistic. Sign and trades where it's one player being signed and traded, those are tricky enough. A double sign and trade and adding all of the variables where like you have to arrive at a number with that player has to want to go to that city or that team. You have to get those teams to agree to the assets swap that would make that all possible. Like it's a giant walking, talking migraine. And when I was asking people about it, kind of walked away from those conversations thinking, I just don't necessarily see it. But for the sake of a hypothetical, and because there ain't shit else going on, let's go ahead and talk through what that would mean and the benefits and the risks involved in doing it. So first and foremost, you trade away LeBron James, and especially if you trade him for somebody who like Andrew Wiggins, you are saying goodbye to a whole bunch of offensive creativity. Now, the Lakers might think, and some of you listening to the show or watching the show right now might think, that the Lakers have enough of that offensive creativity between Luka and Austin. So, like, fine, we can sacrifice some of that if it means getting a little bit more athletic on the wing. And also critically here for the Lakers in terms of managing the cap and their money here moving forward, It keeps a cap slot open that is going to close, whether that be after next season or after the year after that. Like, you're going to lose LeBron James, and you're going to lose him for nothing, because whatever team that he finishes his career on, they are going to lose him to retirement. You don't get to trade him to some other team. In all likelihood, you aren't going to have some wide open, cap slot after he is gone, because your books are going to be devoted to the type of competition that is expected of you while you employ Luka Doncic. Like, you're kind of screwed whenever, like, it's an honor, honestly, that LeBron would retire with you. And it's something that there are certainly people within the walls of the Lakers facilities who would love to see LeBron James retire a Laker. I think there's a big part of LeBron himself who would like to retire a Laker. But also, it does put you behind the eight ball whenever it is that he retires and you lose a talent of LeBron's caliber without getting anything back. And that makes it really tricky to continue to compete at the level that you would if LeBron were still on your roster. So, if you trade LeBron for Andrew Wiggins, who, like, sure, isn't exactly a spring chicken anymore, and there have been times when he just kind of plays or doesn't play, and he's had injury stuff to various extents over the course of his career. He's also somebody who, at his best, is a bona fide championship caliber player. At his worst, at early in his career, looked like an outright bust, right? So, you turn LeBron into Andrew Wiggins, and at the very, very least, you extend that timetable where you have to, at some point, keep that salary slot open with a productive NBA player. So whether that's Andrew Wiggins as he gets older, whether that's, the player that you eventually sign and trade Andrew Wiggins for, whatever it is, it opens up a little bit more flexibility. It extends the runway that the Lakers would have to work with as they try to eventually replace LeBron James. So you got that to take into account. also, from LeBron's standpoint, has this chapter with the Lakers run its course? I'm obviously that's for him to decide, and it's for him and his people to decide, and it's for the Lakers to decide with him as well. And that's a factor in all of this too. But at the end of the day, I don't think it has. Like, if somebody was asking me the question, hey, do you think LeBron's run in the Lakers has run its course? Has he gotten everything that he could possibly have gotten out of being a Laker? I don't think it really has, to be completely honest. I would like to see a more fulfilling chapter to end this portion of LeBron's run in LA than the last three or four years, where the Lakers have very clearly just been waiting for him to whittle away. And me personally, I would like to see LeBron back. I would like to see he and Luka and Austin and whoever else remains on that roster compete for a championship. I think being here with the Lakers gives him his best shot at a championship. I guess if you basically just swap Andrew Wiggins out for him and he goes to Miami and he plays with Giannis and with Bam Adebayo, that is a hell of a front court. But they still have to fill out the rest of the roster. What does that look like? What happens if Giannis gets hurt as he has the last few years? I don't know that Miami is objectively better than the Lakers would be if, you know, you had LeBron on one team versus another. So me personally, I have been very consistent on this front. I have not gotten any information that would point to any other outcome than LeBron being back on the Lakers at some contract that, you know, runs in that 2-year, $50 million a year, $50 million total range, whether that starts at 27 and then finishes at 23, or starts a little higher and finishes a little bit lower, so that it's that much easier to replace his cap slot next year. Whatever it might be, I would still like to see LeBron back on the Lakers. I just think if you swap out him for Wiggins, the fit might be a little bit better. Wiggins is a better defender than LeBron is, but what you give up in, you know, perimeter defense, or no, what you gain in perimeter defense, you give up probably more so in just on ball creativity, and like you lower your team's offensive ceiling by swapping LeBron out for Andrew Wiggins, especially given the way that we just saw him play against Houston. To me, it's still kind of a no brainer. Just bring this dude back, continue to build out the best roster that you can around him. But it does sound as if there are certainly some people there in the Lakers organization who are like, you know, the Chappelle Show, like, wrap it up thing, that, you know, is a bit of a bummer that there's anybody in that organization who might feel that way. All right. That is honestly it in terms of what I wanted to talk about. And that's including the out of nowhere James Worthy story. Let's go ahead and dive on into some of you guys' questions and comments. I asked for, I guess while we were talking about LeBron, I maybe should have mentioned that the Warriors keep on leaking to anybody who will listen that they are apparently like the favorite if LeBron leaves the Lakers, which, like, congrats, I guess. It's crazy, like, how much worse the Warriors organization is now than it was a few years back. And I feel like the starting point of that decline was Kirk Lacob's rise through the ranks of that organization. It's just that almost never pans out. The kid whose dad owns the team, you know, convincing daddy that, yeah, I could run this shit. Like, it just, I can't think of very many examples where that wound up being a good thing for anybody. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing here with the Warriors now, where Kirk Lacob is getting louder and louder and louder, and that organization gets more and more and more inept. But anyway, let's go ahead and dive on into some of you guys' questions. I don't really take the Warriors thing very seriously, so I'm not going to spend any more time on it than I have to. All right. Let's go ahead and dive on into some of your guys' questions, starting at the bottom. At Lightman Burner, is there any possibility that LeBron just takes a year off, then comes back in the 27-28 season? Nope, I don't think that is going to happen. Let's see, another LeBron James question here. I thought I had another one. Oh, okay, Euro Chuck, whatever. What's this report on LeBron and AD to the Warriors? Kevin O'Connor report, sign and trade. I mean, I don't even know what the Lakers would get back from the Warriors that I would be all that interested in, right? Like, and also, like, if you were a Warriors fan and your trade, like, and your front office is signaling that the pathway that they see to success is a 42-year-old LeBron and an Anthony Davis who has played five more games than I have the last couple of years. There's no way I would be very confident in how that could possibly turn out. In terms of players who could come back that I would be interested in, I guess Moses Moody. Like if Moses Moody was put on the table for LeBron, I would listen up a little bit. I have zero interest whatsoever in Brandon Podziemski. Quentin Post? No, not really. So like unless they are basically sending out all the money that they would have to send out to trade for Anthony Davis, and then they are signing LeBron by way of the mid-level exception after acquiring Anthony Davis, I guess that's how you could see that playing out. But that team will be good for like a month, and then Anthony Davis would start to break down, and then, you know, Anthony Davis makes like $60 million. So you would be saying goodbye to Draymond Green in that deal, which would, you know, seriously hamper your ability to defend whenever Anthony Davis is out. You might be able to keep Jimmy Butler in that scenario. Probably not, but maybe. But Jimmy Butler is going to be out for the first chunk of the season next year. And even when he comes back, he's going to be coming off of a horrific knee injury. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, as far as, like, do I take this very seriously? Not really. Neither from the standpoint of, like, I don't think it's particularly, you know, I'm not saying it's illegitimate. I'm saying it's pretty unlikely. And even if it does happen, I don't think the Warriors will be very good. So, you know, good luck if you want to try to pull that off. All right, so the next question, it comes from, let's see, George Santiago writes, are the Lakers actively shopping their guys like Vando, Dalton, and Jake? Vando and Dalton, for sure. I think if those guys start the season on the Lakers roster, it would be a pretty big failure on the part of the Lakers front office, because like the thing that we have learned about team building under this collective bargaining agreement is that the one thing you cannot have and still compete viably is dead money on your books. Like in lots of it, right? Chunks of dead money on your books. Guys who are making anything, you know, higher than like the biannual biannual and above, who don't play, who a coach doesn't trust, you know, whatever, like that dead money is such a just critical baseball bat to the knees. And the Lakers, like I think that JJ Redick manages Jared Vanderbilt poorly. I wish that JJ was a little bit more creative in terms of ways that he utilizes Jared Vanderbilt. But so long as JJ Redick is your head coach and Jared Vanderbilt very clearly doesn't fit into the head coach's ideologies on the sport, then you got to find some other way to use that $14, $15 million that Jared Vanderbilt is going to make next year than the 4 weeks out of the season that you're like, hey, look at Vando go. So same can be said about, you know, Dalton Connect, who, you know, in November will knock down a few threes and you'll be like, dang, look at this guy go. And it'll be like, and I'll remind everybody, hey, remember October, November, Cam Reddish and what that guy looks like. And everybody would be like, oh, come on, you hater. You're this, you're that. Gosh, why don't you cover another team? Because you don't even like the Lakers. And I'll be like, just wait. And then the calendar will turn to December and it'll turn to the following calendar year, and Dalton Kinect will still somehow not know the playbook and not know where to be on either side of the ball. And everybody will kind of remember, oh, yep, that, yeah, that's right. And they'll be like, why didn't you trade him in the offseason? It's like, I told you guys, should have been trying. And that's where the Lakers currently stand right now, where those two guys, those two guys and first round draft capital, plus maybe DeAndre Ayton, depending on who it is that they would be sending that player or those guys out for, like, that is, you know, kind of this year's draft or trade package du jour. In that, every team that I talk to says, yeah, the Lakers are offering Jared Vanderbilt, Dalton Kinect, DeAndre Ayton, first round draft capital. What can we get ourselves? We'll see what that eventually lands. I think what happens at the center spot is going to kind of dictate what those guys are used for, in that, like, if the Lakers do wind up renouncing LeBron James and do wind up renouncing Rui Hachimura, and then they go out and sign, say, Walker Kessler to a really big, restricted free agency offer. And if they land Walker Kessler, then they would look to use Vando and Ayton and Dalton and first round draft capital to go out and get, say, like a Cam Johnson, and you would go into next year with the starting five of, and you would, you know, use whatever cap space is left to bring back Marcus Smart, and you would go into next year with Marcus, Austin, Luka, Cam Johnson, or Rui, or whatever, and Walker Kessler. But yeah, as it stands right now, it's just, you know, this kind of waiting game that the Lakers are, trying to take advantage of. But the waiting game is getting trickier and trickier the further into the summer that they get. Let's see. Herb Wife asking, what do you think will happen with Jake, Rui, Dalton, Nick Smith Jr., Adu Thiroux, and Bronny? All right, I'm just going to go in order. I think Jake is going to be on the team next year. Rui is a coin flip, legitimately, like 50-50. I could see him on the Lakers next year. I could see him on Detroit next year, or Brooklyn or San Antonio or whatever. Dalton, I think, is going to be traded. Nick Smith Jr. doesn't matter. He's not an NBA player. Adu Thiroux, I think he's going to be getting rotation minutes next year. And Bronny, his future with the Lakers is directly linked to LeBron's future with the Lakers. If LeBron is on the team, Bronny's contract gets picked up and he plays rotation minutes next year. If LeBron is not on the team, the Lakers would shortly thereafter, waive Bronny and, not pick up the guaranteed aspect of his, or the non-guaranteed aspect of Bronny's contract. And Bronny would it would be really interesting to see if Bronny, this is the thing that, like, I've always been kind of saying about the Bronny situation, which is nobody ever thinks to ask Bronny what he would like to do. Like, with his career, everybody's like, yeah, Bronny's just going to follow LeBron all over the country playing on whatever team LeBron plays on. And if I were Bronny, I'd be like, wait a second. I am a early 20s, good-looking millionaire, and I have to follow my dad around the country? Is there a door number two? Like, nobody ever seems to ask that question, never comes up, but here we stand. Bronny, like, is gonna, like, as far as his future with the Lakers, If LeBron is a Laker, Bronny will be a Laker. If LeBron is not a Laker, Bronny will go somewhere, wherever, but he won't be a Laker. Let's see. Spencer Morvek asks thoughts on Zaire Williams. Well, this is what's funny about the Bronny thing. It's a funny, it just kind of played out this way. This is the order of the tweets that I see in my timeline. Zaire Williams, teammate of Bronny's back in high school. And Dan Wojcicki, obviously of The Athletic, reported that, you know, one of the Lakers' free agency options is Williams. The Nets obviously have their roster crunch and they let Zaire Williams go. He is a very athletic wing and he is a very young athletic wing who checks a couple of boxes for the Lakers. Unfortunately, for the Lakers or whatever team signs Zaire Williams, every time I've watched him, I have not been positive that dude knows how to play basketball. So, and by that, I mean like, you know, like the geometry of defense and offense and cutting and shooting. And he's absolutely talented enough to be in the NBA. I just don't watch him and think to myself like, all right, that guy's about to get it. I just, you know, I don't think he makes a whole bunch of sense for the Lakers unless he's like a 14th or 15th guy who gets, you know, like that they would take a flyer on. He is so far down the priority list, or players like that are so far down the priority list right now, you got to get your center. That is priorities 1, 2, and 3. From there, you figure out whatever else you have to figure out. But Zaire Williams, is real far down there for me. All right, let's check in on the live chat to see how we're doing in here. We have a few super comments here, so I'm going to go ahead and play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! All right, the first question that we have comes from Greenlight Transport 8320, who writes, forget Kessler and Watson, first-round pick for Gafford, first-round pick for Dort, and let's get the show on the road. Sign LeBron, Gafford, LeBron, Dort, Reeves, Luka. Let's go. Well, the issue there is that I don't see Rob using all of his first-round draft capital on Daniel Gafford and Lu Dort. Those guys are both fine players. The Mavericks have basically been holding out for a first round pick for Daniel Gafford. But I think there's a reason that nobody in the league is interested in giving up a first round pick for Daniel Gafford. And it's that he's always hurt and he's an okay center. Like, that's it. You know, he is somebody who, if I give up a first round pick for Daniel Gafford, I am getting back. Like, we saw the Phoenix Suns send, you know, Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal and a first round pick to Charlotte today for Miles Bridges. And I think they got back like a heavily protected first round pick. Like, if the Lakers send a first round pick for Daniel Gafford, they would hopefully get a either heavily protected first round pick or a bunch of second rounders back, because Daniel Gafford is almost the exact definition of mid in the NBA. Maybe a little above mid, but not by much. So I wouldn't give up a first rounder for him. Lu Dort is interesting in that you make OKC worse by acquiring Lu Dort, which would be kind of nice. But also, like, we saw him kind of fade in the postseason most recently, and that is something that makes me a little nervous. So I don't know if I would give up a first rounder for Dort, and especially if you're like doing OKC the favor of, you know, helping them get all the way underneath that second apron and, you know, completely clear up their salary situation. Also, if you do that, right, if you trade for Dort into your space, it'd be one thing if you could like get Dort for like Vando or something like that. Then I might be a little bit more interested. But if you're trading for Dort into your cap space and you have to say goodbye to one of LeBron or Rui for it on top of giving up a first round pick, not really all that interested. So, but like if, you know, somehow, some way the Lakers would only give up one first rounder for both of those guys, then all right, now I'm a little more interested. Just looking back at the reactions to the James Worthy story, and yeah, it was a fun story. It's one of my favorites of my career. All right, let's go to the next question here. Devon DeBerry Martin. What do you think of overpaying for Kessler for a 2-for-1 deal? Steal him from the Jazz, still have your picks available to go after wings on the market. The 2-for-1 being you're saying goodbye to both LeBron and Rui to sign Walker Kessler. You better hope he works out, you know, and you better hope that Utah doesn't match. This is the part of that scenario that I don't think people are taking seriously enough. That being that, like, all right, let's say the Lakers say goodbye to LeBron, say goodbye to Rui Hachimura. They open up whatever, all of the money that they need to open up to make this Godfather offer to Walker Kessler. And Danny Ainge and Austin Ainge go, fuck. Shoot. Well, I guess we have to match. Now, you no longer have the bird rights to LeBron James. You no longer have the bird rights to Rui Hachimura. And you have just told both of those guys that Walker Kessler is more valuable than the two of them combined. Like, then you're completely screwed. Then you're like, then you might have to overpay LeBron to come back. Then you might have to overpay Rui Hachimura to come back. And that's just so that you could be exactly where you were before you started those conversations about Walker Kessler. That is terrifying. And that is something that I don't think the Lakers are willing to risk. Now, if you talk to the Utah Jazz and say, all right, we are willing to renounce LeBron James and we are willing to renounce Rui for the sake of making an ungodly offer to Walker Kessler that either you let him walk for, or you match and it hurts your books for the foreseeable future, right? And that conversation leads to, or we could work out a sign and trade where we avoid all of those other headaches altogether. You get something from us, draft capital, DeAndre Ayton, Vando, if you want Vando back. Dalton Connect, if you want a white dude back. Like, we could try to work something out in a sign and trade, or you can, you know, keep this guy whose agent does not like you at all, or you can keep this guy and these rumors of him not wanting to be there longer term will continue, you know, whatever. Or you could risk us making that kind of an offer and fucking up your books for the foreseeable future. And it would be really interesting to see how both of those sides would handle those conversations. But there are just so many ifs, and there are so many qualifiers, and there are so many hurdles and speed bumps and right turns and left turns and loop-de-loos that you have to navigate through all of that to maybe just maybe get Walker Kessler on the other end of it. And the what you risk is alienating LeBron and alienating Rui Hachimura to the point where you then have to bring those guys back at like $5 million over what you should probably have to bring them back at. I don't know. I don't necessarily see it where, with Walker Kessler, even granting how badly I want to see him in a Laker uniform next year. But until he is officially signed in Utah and until Jalen Duren is officially signed in Utah, the Lakers are going to keep making those calls and they're going to keep bugging him and they're going to keep sending those emails and they're going to keep sending those emails which ask if the Utah Jazz had seen their previous emails, and they're going to keep leaving voicemails about whether or not Danny and Austin Ainge have seen the voicemails that Rob Pelinka has left before. Those conversations are going to continue all the way up until the moment that Jalen Duren and Walker Kessler officially sign their deals. Until then, you're probably not going to get an official offer to LeBron. You're probably not going to be able to move forward with some of the other options at the center position. And at the time when those guys sign those deals with their current teams, then the Lakers probably call up Milwaukee and be like, what would it take to get Miles Turner? And we see how those conversations go. All right. The next question that we have here comes from... All right. Timor 0414. This isn't a super comment, but I saw it scrolling by, so I'll go ahead and answer it. Have you heard anything about this Jokic to the Lakers stuff? I know that the Lakers would absolutely love to make the Denver Nuggets a little nervous about their standing with Nikola Jokic. I know Luka and Jokic would really, really, really like to play together. But I just don't see a world where the Nuggets, unless Jokic goes to the Nuggets and says, Stan Kroenke, you never paid luxury taxes. You never did this. You never did that. You fired my coach. You did that. Like, whatever it would be that he, whatever reasons he presents to the Kroenkes as why he would want to force his way to the Lakers, I just don't see it. Now, that said, over the course of this season, there's going to be a lot of noise. Just prepare yourselves for there being a lot of noise there. I said this yesterday on the show. I'm going to continue to repeat it. I want the Lakers to build out the best roster that they can possibly build to vie for a championship and to build such a good team that Jokic looks over and asks Luka what it's like to be a Laker. And Luka is able to confidently tell Jokic, it's probably a hell of a lot better than being a Denver Nugget right now. And the two players start to, you know, put their thumbs on the scales to hopefully force Jokic to the Lakers. But like I saw this point being made on Twitter today about like, you can't do anything until you see for sure how the things are going to play there with Jokic. Absolutely the fuck not. I am not willing to risk pissing off Luka Doncic for the sake of Jokic maybe just maybe becoming available. Nope. Not even a little interested. I know Jokic is great. He is one of the best basketball players I have ever seen. I would love to see him on the Lakers and especially with Luka, but I am not willing to do like to kick the can down the road again for the sake of keeping powder dry for a guy who might just be like angling to maximize his earnings with that team. You know, which involves passing up on extensions to sign during free agency windows. Let's see. Ashley Romero is what I'm going with there. Rui, Vando, DA, and three firsts for Evan Mobley or Zion Williamson. Would you do this? Well, the Lakers can't do that because they only have two first rounders to trade. Now, Evan Mobley is reportedly a part of the Cavs pitch to, or what the Celtics would like to get for Jaylen Brown. And if you're the Cavs, like, you know, Evan Mobley is going to be really expensive. Jaylen Brown is also going to be really expensive. Do you trade Mobley for the more playoff proven player in Brown and carry things out that way? But if you're like Boston, do you just hold on to Mobley in that scenario? We'll see. But the thing with Cleveland and Boston and Denver and Detroit and Utah is they are all focused on being good basketball teams next year. And the Lakers, whenever they have trade negotiations with teams, what they are offering is draft assets and financial flexibility. But if you're trying to be as good as you can possibly be as a basketball roster next year, those things don't matter to you. So those teams that would be coming from, or those players that would be coming from teams that are trying to be competitive next year, what the Lakers have to offer isn't very appealing. So it makes it really tricky. Now, as far as Zion catching lobs from Luka would be interesting. I'm not going to lie. I would be intrigued. My concern with Zion is I just don't think he's like mature at all. All right. I'm not going to say which player it is, but there was a player that the Lakers were interested in trading for a couple of years back who they could have gotten and would have legitimately helped and would have aged pretty well to this point since the time that the Lakers could have traded for that player. Trade talks got fairly far down the line. And then, the Lakers talk to some people around the league about this player. And the Lakers come to find out that this player had a couple of habits that would have been, let's just say, enabled by living in Los Angeles. And they were like, nope, not going to trade for this guy. Because they were worried about that player's lifestyle choices and tendencies and how they would handle those things in Los Angeles, being zillionaires, young, good-looking zillionaires in Los Angeles. They were like, no, we're not really interested in that. That player eventually gets traded to a different team, has a pretty good run, and the rest is history. And I think that the Lakers probably feel about Zion Williamson right now the way that they felt about that other player before, where it's like Zion has some tendencies. He has some interests. He has some vices. And if you open Zion Williamson to Los Angeles with the amount of money and the amount of resources that Zion Williamson has, how well would those vices go for him? And I think there are probably some people who are like, might work out. Maybe he turns a page. Maybe he matures. But also, maybe he doesn't. And there are very real and fair concerns on that front that would keep the Lakers from trading for Zion Williamson. I did not like answering that question because I do not like talking about that stuff. All right, we move on to the next super comment that we have here. And we have, I think, a few more. Let's see. Tori Dispress left a super comment without a question. So I'm going to see if there is a question or a comment here. Otherwise, oh, here we go. What is this Marcus Smart noise? What are the chances the Lakers don't bring back Smart? I feel like losing him for nothing would be pretty rough. Completely agree about that. The Lakers really want him back, is what I have been able to glean, is that they 100% believe in his impact on the locker room last year. They 100% believe in his impact on the defense last year. And they 100% believe that they would, you know, that it makes all the sense in the world to bring him back. However, they have limited funds here and they don't have bird rights on him. And so if some team comes way over the top, then you do risk losing this guy for nothing. But from what I've kind of been told and based on the conversations that I've had so far, the Lakers have made a pretty big priority of trying to keep Marcus Smart. And I think it would be wise to do so, pun intended. Let's see. Okay, so you left the question again there. Thank you very much for the supers there as well. But yeah, that's where I am at on those fronts. And that's where the Lakers are on those fronts. All right. I think I'm going to pop out of here, cross the hour threshold, going to chop this thing up, serve it up for you guys in the morning, and then go on about my happy way and watch Thrones. So if there's any kind of breaking news or any kind of report that, you know, I need to hop right on here for, I will hop right on here to do that. And that is going to be the plan, obviously, for the next couple of weeks or so. So for the time being, have a great rest of your weekends, make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys, might be in 5 minutes, who knows. Have a good one, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.